From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour is made in a report card. But how do you grade, for example, the entire Rochester City School District during a pandemic? What kind of problems would naturally arise, and what kinds of problems can be addressed right now? Rock the Future offers an annual report card, and the 2020 report card is complicated, to say the least. For example, the number of students who completed applications for financial aid fell significantly from 2019. That's a problem, right? Not getting the necessary help to go to college. But it's also, I don't know, is it consistent with what we should expect during a pandemic? I truly have no idea. But Rock the Future is looking for solutions. And then look at the data regarding teacher engagement. It's mostly trending in a positive direction, relationship building. Teachers are more aware of what their kids are dealing with. They know their families better. They understand how to help them in specific ways, inside and outside the classroom. That's undeniably good news. So what do we need to do now as a community? Rochester students are not getting back in the classroom anytime soon. Teachers and staff are doing their best under the circumstances. And our guests will offer an analysis of this report card and help us all understand it. Because I think in a normal year, you look at some of these, the metrics, the data, how students are doing academically, how they're doing with support services. It's pretty easy. This year, a little bit harder. Let's talk about that. Jackie Campbell is director of Rock the Future at the Children's Agenda. Jackie, welcome back to the program.
Hi, Evan.
Welcome back to Sean Nelms, chair of Rock the Future conveners and superintendent at East. Sean, welcome back to the program.
Hello, Evan.
Stephanie Townsend's with us, director of research and analytics for Rock the Future. Stephanie, welcome to you as well.
Thank you so much, Evan.
Let me start with really sort of the data wonk is Stephanie, and I just want to ask you, I mean, I picked up the 28 pages that are sitting in a stack right here in front of me, and you know, spent some time this morning just trying to make sure I understand it. And I don't think I know how to read it as well as maybe you would because of the pandemic. I don't know what I should say. Okay, well, we got to give a little bit of a pass to this category or this category, but not to this category. I mean, how do we approach it in an unusual year like this, Stephanie?
That's a great question, Evan. The first thing that's important to recognize is that some of the data that are in the report card are not from last year, because we rely heavily on the New York State assessments, which, of course, were suspended due to the pandemic. So part of what you're seeing here in this report card is a deeper look at the data from the 2018-2019 school year, where we took this as an opportunity to dive in to the details a little bit more, rather than simply looking at what are the outcomes district-wide, we looked at what are the outcomes for each individual school.
Yeah, and so I think the data is it's a helpful publication, I should say. And listeners, you can find it easily on Rock the Future's website. The data will tell you this is from 2018-2019 school year. For example, I mentioned FAFSA and financial aid. There's a note there. It is on looking at 2019 vis-a-vis 2020. So it is delineated well, pretty well. But I guess, Stephanie, in the whole here, is this a moment where we have to pause a bit because of the pandemic? I mean, there's been a lot of debate in this community about whether students should be in classrooms at all, or is a lot of the work to address these issues happening regardless of pandemic?
The work is happening regardless of the pandemic, and that is critically important that that work continue to move forward. We cannot put our children's education on hold. And in fact, I think that looking at how do we strengthen the education system in Rochester is even more important now, because those children are going to be coming back into the in-person classrooms in the near future. And when they do, we are going to have to be even more prepared. We can't just pick up where we left off. We are going to have to deal with all of the academic, social, and emotional impacts of being out of the classroom for so long.
Jackie Campbell, how's the overall picture look to you when you think about the goals of supporting student achievement, building relationships, transforming school systems, transforming community systems? What's the overall picture look like to you?
I think I would echo Stephanie's comments in terms of the work that needs to happen regardless of the pandemic. I think that we were leaning more towards this before the pandemic in terms of taking a much more system level view. We have been reporting on student achievement and on assessments, but we have been having a discussion for quite a while that how our scholars are doing is more than just based on academic assessments. So this, I think that the pandemic sort of forced us to take a take this look sooner than some of us might have liked or really had the opportunity to do that. But it does give us an opportunity to sort of amplify that this is a community responsibility. How our children are doing is not the sole responsibility of one school or one school district, but how we all are lifting together. So that's how I'm reading it in terms of thinking how we can transform our school systems and our community systems, and just the way we engage around education for our students.
Sean Nelms, how do you see the overall picture?
Yeah, I mean, I think that what's important about Rock the Future is this is the eighth year, and so we have enough data to start to find trends in terms of which schools are successful and why, and which schools, unfortunately, are underperforming, and some of the root causes for that also. So I believe as we go through this eighth year, we move towards the future collectively, we should be able to better inform Board of Education policy, state policy, but also our community's response and our actions towards creating more equitable schools across the Rochester City School District, and not just in these isolated pockets of excellence.
Well, and I'm looking at one of the categories that I think has to be one of the biggest. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but just third grade ELA proficiency. And when I look at the data set that you have here, and this is 2018 to 2019, this is non-pandemic impact here. This is pre-pandemic. Let me go ahead and read the data as best I can. Stephanie will correct me on any errors here, and let's talk about this particular issue. So third grade English language arts proficiency, 2018-2019 in the Rochester City School District. How many students are at proficiency in third grade? New York State average, 52%. Rochester City School District overall, 18%. That is, I think the arrow says that's going up a little bit, but 18%. Girls are at 21%. Boys are at 16%. And when I look at, there's a category that you have a column for the highest school achievement. There does not, from what I'm reading, there does not appear to be a single school in the Rochester City School District where more than 48% of the students in third grade are at ELA proficiency. So not even, no schools with at least half the students in third grade at that level. Stephanie, is that correct? Am I reading that data correctly?
Yes, you are. The only correction is that for New York State, that is not an average. That is the rate for New York State.
I'm sorry.
So,
okay.
So yes. So and it's important to have that reference to New York State in there because that number in itself is very surprising oftentimes to people. In New York State, only 52% of third graders test proficient on the assessment that they're currently using. So in Rochester, the highest school is at 48%. So that sounds low, but it is very close to the state rate. So in terms of being on par with other school districts, the highest performing schools in Rochester are not that far off of what we're seeing statewide.
Okay. Sean Nelms, when I looked at third grade ELA proficiency, help me read it in the way that you do and take me through what you're looking at, what's concerning, and maybe what is offering some hope.
So thank you. Yeah, that's a great question. What I don't want to do is to sugarcoat the obvious that there's work to be done. And what we have learned with our work through Rock the Future, as well as using national models like Strive and looking at successful urban centers, is that in schools that are successful, they typically have an aligned, vertically aligned, meaning what happens in pre-K builds on what happens in kindergarten, and kindergarten to first, curriculum, a vertically aligned, robust, viable, and guaranteed curriculum for students at each grade level and at each transition point. And what we have realized here is, although Rochester has one of the best pre-K programs in the nation, students start to regress in some settings based on a lack of curriculum and curricular oversight. If you noticed, Dr. Meyer Small just added to her cabinet a chief academic officer, and her name is Dr. Black, and her main job, I believe, among many of the things she's going to have to deal with, is to lean in and figure out what's happening in each classroom that guarantees that as students move through the system, they exit with very consistent and equitable learning experiences. And so what that report card says to me is that there is a lack of consistency and coherence happening between and among classrooms. That does not mean that teachers are teaching poorly. That does not mean that administrators aren't leading well. It just means that there is they don't have a consistent map, roadmap in front of them that will help them better understand how kids are coming and entering their classrooms at third grade, and also with some clear standards and expectations about what they should be leaving with, knowing and being able to do as third grade students. That's what that data says to me. And Rock the Future, through many of our planning groups and our work groups, are going to focus in on issues like reading at third grade and graduation rates and community engagement and family engagement. The list goes on and on and on. So again, I have to reiterate, we're 8 years into this work. We have enough data now to predict and to what might happen next if we don't intervene. We have enough data now to better understand the root causes of systemic failure, because we know it's not about the kids. The fact that some kids can go to some schools and do really well, and some kids can go to other schools by no fault of their own and do poorly, means the issue is systemic. It's not kid, it's not family, it's not parent. The system itself, without a robust curriculum, essentially is playing a guessing game with the type of instruction a kid may or may not receive as they move through the RCSD system. And I'm very proud to see that the new superintendent put in the position as chief academic officer to address this and find someone who is nationally known and someone who has experience in building curriculum in her own right. So I'm excited about that change.
Let me push a little bit on that, or at least try to help clarify a point here, Sean, because when you talk about the importance of consistency of approach and finding the right approach and being able to know that every classroom is bringing an approach that's going to work and sort of maximally for the student population that they have, I hear that, and I think that comes from someone like yourself who is a respected leader in education, someone with a lot of experience getting results in challenging circumstances. But I look at this data, and here's kind of what comes to mind to me. If it's 18% of Rochester students who are meeting third grade ELA proficiency, fewer than one out of five, 8 years into Rock the Future, many years now into reform efforts and outreach efforts, help me see if I'm wrong when I feel like you can throw everything you got and you will make some improvements, and you are. And some of these trend lines are in the better direction. All students going up, girls going up, boys going up. That's slowly, but it's happening. That's a good thing. But it seems to me that as much as you try, when we see economic inequality and poverty entrenched in the way it is in certain communities, there's probably a ceiling. There's probably a ceiling that says you can throw everything you got, but if you've got this level of inequality, you are not going to wake up one day and say, look, we did it. We're at the level of X school in the suburbs or whatever. I mean, is poverty too big of a barrier?
I don't agree with that. And I'll tell you why. And I say maybe I can't agree with that, because if that is true, that means we are publicly saying that some kids will never have a chance at life. Because throughout this nation, even within its own community, you have issues of poverty. And so if we adopt that philosophy, we are pretty much throwing in the towel on all the kids who are within a system that they have no choice but to be in. I would tell you that there are models that have worked and that are working with the same type of issues of poverty, very similar, but by addressing the academic systemic issues that exist. And I'll tell you, honestly, and this is a selfish plug, but East is doing that. East has taken the same type of kids they had before East, and they had gone through 10 years of reform and millions of dollars thrown at it, And we focused on the root causes, what the parents told us they needed, what the kids said they needed, what the teachers said they needed, what the leaders said they needed to be able to have control and ownership over the success and or the failure of the organization. They've leaned in, and we've moved our graduation rates from 33% to 78% in 5 years. Same type of kids, same structures, but we took the funding and matched it to the issues that were identified by the people expected to benefit from them, as opposed to going out and buying a system that may have worked in Chicago and bringing that to Rochester without it being adapted to a Rochester context. So you'll never hear me say that poverty is a determining factor of someone's success or the ceiling that they might reach, especially being from a kid who grew up in abject poverty, whose family was dependent on social services. I would never accept that. Now, I think that accepting that becomes a convenient excuse by those who want to say, well, the education system is working, blow it up. What I would say is let's lean into what's working, and this is what Rock the Future is doing. This is what the Center for Urban Education Success at the U of R is doing. We're documenting what's working and what's not working and creating a path forward for districts seeking to improve. Now, what happens with that information becomes critical. So to what extent will districts like Rochester actually change and make funding its priority to address those issues, like social emotional learning so kids can come and be in safe and caring environments, like teacher and leader preparation? To what extent are the adults in the system ready to transform the way in which they have been taught to teach and taught to assess in ways that match the kids' interests, belief, and readiness? And then to what extent will the community wrap itself around it? I'll tell you, you know this, I put a great deal of pressure on the University of Rochester to not only look at this as a Warner School of Education Human Development Initiative, but from a medical standpoint, from a dental standpoint, school of nursing standpoint, the school of business, like all those entities have wrapped itself around the East Project. We have to make sure that model is known and it's expanded to all schools in Rochester. And Rock the Future, as the host agency for all these different conveners, the medical, the education, the business, it's their responsibility to help create the roadmap so that people know how to lean in and how to address the issues that plague our community. I know it's a very long answer, but I want to be clear to the listeners that poverty is not an excuse. It definitely has an impact. And it's not poverty by definition of funding or in terms of how much money someone makes, but all the social impediments that come along with living in an impoverished setting. But we can fix that. We've seen that happen in other settings. What Rochester has not done well is aligned itself in ways that focus in on the problem together, and then people share the success and or the failure collectively. And that's what we've been doing, and that's why I was so proud to be named the chair of Rock the Future, because they are an agnostic group of people trying to come together to do this work, and they've shown that they can do it if the district leans in, and Dr. Myers and her team is leaning in. And so I'm much more optimistic than I was a couple of years ago when the type of collaboration was not happening between the RCSD and Rock the Future.
Let me ask Jackie Campbell to elaborate on that. I mean, that's exactly the reason that so many people in this community look to leaders like Dr. Nelms, because there is a lack of willingness to accept poverty as sort of an excuse, as he said. And I think we should demand our leaders not do that. But I also think, Jackie, you're still working with a playing field, if you want to use that sort of analogy, that is really uneven and really, really difficult. Can you elaborate, Jackie?
So one of the areas where we see that playing field, how it plays out, is with respect to outcomes by racial or ethnic identity. So we do have significantly lower outcomes in terms of early grade literacy proficiency. And so we see some of that, how that inequity plays out. But I also agree with Dr. Nelms, and one of the things that we have right now in Rochester, and not just in Rochester, around the country, is this reckoning around racial equity. And we've seen it play out in some of the activist action in our community. And we have a greater embracing, I would say, of the reality of inequity and how it plays out by race. And so the district is also looking at racial equity. And so we're in alignment around inequity around what's happening in the schools, and that that it also plays out in the classrooms as well. So providing the appropriate development, or really looking at the system that that are that govern how teachers do their work, that govern how where students actually go to school, like all of those things come into play when we're talking about inequitable outcomes. Mm-hmm. And yeah, what really happens is that it's about how adults come together and really take a evidence-based approach, looking at where the bright spots are, where are we having success, and really being honest and talking about where we do not have success and how to stop doing some of those things that we know are not working.
In a moment, I'm going to bring in Regina Walters, an East High class of 2022 student who's going to be on the line with us. But before I do that, let me get an email on the subject of financial aid that we've been talking about. And I know our guests know Pat Brouse, who is from the Rochester Education Foundation. She sends along the following note just to emphasize some points on what's going on right now. She says, hi, Evan. Good topic. A few key points regarding college access. Number one, filing of the free application for federal student aid, that's FAFSA. Those applications is down nationally from March when schools were closed. In Rochester, we have seen a steady increase in FAFSA filing in Rochester since we launched our community FAFSA Fest events in 2015. This dropped when schools were closed in March of 2020. Third point is that the rate of FAFSA filings in Rochester increased nearly 5% between June 2018 and June 2019, and the Rochester Education Foundation received a national award for this increase. And the fourth is that we can't offer direct help to students with FAFSA this year, but we are offering FAFSA-thon events and offer free help. So please spread the word, and you can find a lot more at rochestercan.org. But Sean Nelms, what have you seen with the challenge in this school year and into this fall? And just looking ahead, I mean, who knows how long this pandemic goes. So since March, what has the challenge been? And what are your concerns about students who might have been on the edge of saying, am I going to college? Am I going to try? Is the money out there? Is there an avenue to apply? What does that look like right now?
Yeah, Evan, I'll tell you, I'll answer this as a parent of a current senior in high school and as superintendent. It's been tough. I mean, it's been tough. I mean, my daughter's relying solely on virtual college visits, and, you know, you don't get the same feeling if you can't be on campus and see students interacting. So she's unsure which college she wants to choose. When I speak to East seniors and juniors, you know, they don't have direct access to their counselors or their teachers, and they're struggling with the application process, they're struggling with the FAFSA forms, they're struggling with getting letters of recommendation. I mean, for our high school juniors and seniors, including my daughter, this has been a completely new experience. Now, you take that and you couple that with parents who perhaps for the first time are going through this college application, college-going process. As someone who leads a school and been in education my entire life, I struggle with meeting the deadlines and understanding mm-hmm. and feeling confident in the application process for college or for military or for work. And so for many of our families, they are in complete limbo right now. And we continue to reach out. We have counselors reaching out to parents. We've done virtual college sessions for parents and students. We continue to do those. We're reaching out. But even when students were fully engaged, the application process, the college process is very intimidating. You have to reveal your financials. You have to be very honest about your living conditions. And there are certain questions you just don't want to answer. And now imagine doing that virtually with little to no in-person support. It becomes extremely challenging. However, I'm very proud of our school principals and our teachers and our counselors for reaching out and being proactive and trying to engage with students and their parents to make it less daunting. But for any parent who is going through this process, again, myself included, it is extremely frustrating trying to figure out what to do next. And it's extremely frustrating knowing that financially, if you lost your job and or you've had to make some serious decisions financially, to be able to afford college becomes another conversation that for another time, but that's also become a huge hindrance and a concern for our parents and our students.
All right, Stephanie Townsend, anything to add to that?
I think that again, what we have to remember is that in the light of this pandemic, it's not going to be just simply go back to normal. It is going to take all of us in the community. And as much as the systems level change is absolutely what we need and what we need to be focusing on, I would also issue a challenge to every individual to think about what can they do? What can their business place do? How can they support these kids during this time? If you have a neighbor who is 17, 18 years old, you reach out to them, offer them some support, offer them guidance. And it really is going to take all of us so that we don't lose this generation of kids because of this pandemic.
All right. After our only break of the hour, we're going to bring in Regina Walters, who is part of the class 2022 at East High. We're talking about Rock the Future's annual report card, some of which includes data that's pre-pandemic, some is not. And it's a mixed picture with, yes, as our guests have been saying, some real concerning numbers, but also some trend lines going in a better direction. And Jackie Campbell, Sean Nelm, Stephanie Townsend, all with us helping break it down. We'll talk to a student as well on the other side of our only break. Coming up in our second hour, we take a look at relationships that have been frayed by this recent election. Now, marriages especially are strained when one in the couple votes one way and one votes another. It happens throughout the course of a marriage and throughout the course of a lifetime, but this particular election feels more polarizing and more dangerous to relationships. We'll talk about how couples are navigating that next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Superintendent Nelms, do you know Regina Walters?
Yes, I do. She's one of our best, and she can sing. Let me tell you, she has a beautiful voice.
Well, looking at the resume, 16 years old, member of the class 2022 at East, and participating in the first day of the virtual State of Our Children Address as a member of the Distance Learning Impact of the Digital Divide panel discussion. Her hobbies include singing, dancing. She won first place in singing talent shows. She's performed at many concerts at school and in the community and taken professional voice lessons at Eastman. She's a proud Wegmans employee. It's a long resume. Regina, it's going to take up the rest of the hour. I'll just stop there and welcome you and say thanks for being with us. How are you?
Thank you so much. I'm great. And yourself?
I'm okay, you know, on this beautiful, bizarre 80-degree November day. Everything feels a little upside down these days. And I know it does for you and your classmates as well. How are you hanging in there during this pandemic, Regina? What has life been like for you?
You know, it's been a little difficult. With the distance learning and being the perspective of a student, it has been difficult online learning from many things like the distractions at home, waking up every day and wanting to be online. One thing I can say that I have gained from the distance learning is I've obtained better communication and consistency skills because of the fact that we are 100% online. And one thing that has been helping me, many advocates in the community, such as Dr. Delms and the superintendent, I feel those people in my school have been trying to implement many care resources to help students feel comfortable and using those times to talk about whatever students are feeling. So we have a 15-minute time period before we join classes to just talk about, you know, how we're feeling and how our night was the time before. So those kind of things have been keeping me, I feel, sane, and I don't have to join them every single day. But I do know that that's somewhere, you know, where I can feel comfortable and just let everything out. And I think that's one thing that advocates have been trying to implement in my school and also other schools in the RCSD district. And I want to recognize that those advocates are trying to do the best thing for youth and as a whole being virtual online.
Well, Regina, I know you're 16, and I want to talk a little bit about your own thoughts about your future. And I want to preface this by saying I don't want to talk to you with the implication that college is the only route to success. I mean, there are a lot of ways that people succeed. The skilled trades, you know, some people don't go to college and are brilliant in so many other ways outside the classroom. That doesn't preclude someone from success. But we also know that in this country, you've got a better chance for sort of a steady lifetime income, et cetera, if you go to college. So I know it's a complicated picture, but I want to ask you first, Regina, how old do you think you were when you knew or decided for yourself, I'm definitely doing that?
When I feel that I decided I was going to take that step into going to college and I really wanted to go was probably my freshman year, because I joined a program that, you know, guided me and physically taught me what to expect in college. By taking opportunities in the community and meeting new people, I've joined a program that I can be in until I graduate to, you know, kind of guide me into what college is going to be like. So I feel when I was 14, 15 in the ninth grade, that's kind of where I saw the light to college. And, you know, I understand completely. There's many people out there who are successful who have not been to college. But personally, I really feel I need to go because I feel that's the best way I can be where I want to be. So college is a huge thing for me now. So I have been looking into it and seeing what is open in my options financially, mentally. So I'm kind of starting to die down now and weighing out my options. So I think those are kind of some of the things and the ideas I've thought of when it comes to, you know, being in college or wanting to go to college.
Sure. Think back to when you were in middle school, not that long ago. You were 11, 12, 13. When you were that age, what percentage of your peer group, your friend group, what percentage do you think that that group of friends you had would have said, yes, I want to go to college, and yes, I'm going to go to college?
I believe that the percentages were more so on the lower side when I was in middle school. All of, like, me and my friends, we all are the kind of people to, you know, be on the earlier scale, kind of having more mature minds. So we already knew kind of what college was and the concept of it and getting out of high school. But at that time, I do feel like the percentages were more low just because we weren't really worried about that at that time. I feel we were worried about, you know, getting good grades and staying young and being in middle school. It wasn't really thought of college.
Sure.
But now that I have become older and more mature, it definitely has increased the way I think about it. And I also think it's the same for my friends as well. So now also me and my peers, or my peers and I, we have kind of created a group to where we talk about, you know, going to college and the things we want to do and how we can succeed. And we also talk about if we didn't go to college, how would we succeed as well. So we kind of think about both sides on, you know, how we can be successful, because there isn't only one way to be successful. There's multiple ways. And that's what, you know, people I'm surrounded by, that's the kind of things we talk about.
Well, and one more question on that subject, and I'll read mm-hmm. I'll read a little data for listeners that comes from the Rock the Future report card, the 2020 report card on financial aid completion of forms, just based on Rochester City School District numbers. Students completing financial aid forms by March last year, so pre-pandemic, 2019, it was 34% of Rochester students, so about 1 in 3. This year by March, it was 29%. Now, again, the pandemic hit early March, could have certainly been an impact. By June, so by end of the school calendar year, 2019, 42% of Rochester students had filled out financial aid forms. By June this year, down to 35%. So certainly the pandemic has hurt colleges. It's hurt the students who want to go to college. I mean, it's hurt everything. I understand that. But I want to mm-hmm. I want to pull back from that data set and just ask you a general question. When we see that fewer than half, and sometimes around one third of Rochester students are filling out financial aid forms, when nearly all would be eligible for some kind of aid, it's an indication of a lot of different things. Why do you think so many students, despite all of the efforts happening, Regina, why do you think so many of your peers go through the first 18 years of their lives and they just don't think college is for them? Why?
I think it has to do with definitely what you're surrounded by in your environment at home. I think that's where it all starts. So if you're around, you know, someone who has already been to college or someone who didn't complete college, those kind of things, you know, affect you. Like, I know some kids who both of their parents are at home and neither of them went to college. And a goal that one of my friends created was to be a first generation college student. So I think it all starts to where you're surrounded by and to what you're taught. So throughout whatever school you go to, I think when you're taught that college is important or if it's not important, that's kind of where it starts, kind of implementing the idea that if college is important, these are the routes I need to take to be successful by doing this. If college isn't important, this is what I need to do to, you know, not go to college, and this is what I can do instead. So I think that's kind of a reason why kids feel sometimes college isn't important or that's not where they want to go to be successful. So those are kind of some of the things I think about. I think environment plays the biggest factor in kids who don't want to go to college.
Now tell me something a little bit more positive here. Look into your own future. 10 years from now, you're going to be the ripe old age of 26. We all remember that age. Feels like forever, Regine, but it's going to happen before you know it. What do you want to be doing 10 years from now?
In 10 years, I definitely see myself out of the country, and also I also see myself being a huge advocate in my city. I can see myself probably have gone in another college after I already did 4 years, or I can imagine myself being like really big somewhere. And I think I would also try to remember I've always been the kind of kid to, you know, represent the youth and keep that strong community. So I would also want to also come back to my hometown so that kids know that things that I'm doing are important. So expressing the fact that we want to hear younger students or younger minds, and we want to hear their opinions rather than just hearing maybe older mindsets or more so adults. And I feel like that's what I would be doing. I would be a huge advocate in Rochester specifically because all the stuff that has happened in the city, I still love the city and I want it to be better. So by doing what we're doing right now, by talking about it and talking about the distance learning and what we want to do to change it and coming up with new ideas to how we could be a community as a whole and being stronger in, you know, not thinking more so of the negative things, trying to bring in more positivity. So I do feel that that's where I would be in 10 years doing that for sure. I really do.
November 10th, 2030. That's 10 years from now. You are now invited to join the talk show. I'll be here. I'm going to be here in 10 years doing the same thing right here. I don't know.
Okay.
I hope so. You're invited. I want you to come back. And Sean Nelms, I know why now you wanted Regine to tell her story here. She's a star, and you can understand just her future is unlimited. What do you make of some of her comments about the way kids kind of go through their adolescence and how their feelings evolve on what future looks like, whether college is for them, what kind of future or not works for them? And there's a lot there. What do you make of what you heard from her? Oh, unmute for me, Sean Nelms.
Hello?
There you go.
I'm there. All right. I had no idea that she was going to even be on the show, to be honest with you. I mean, she's so involved in things in the community that she just happened to be part of one of the work groups for Rock the Future, and they selected her as a speaker. So she was not a plant. This is based on her own merit. I'm always impressed with her, and she knows that, and I love her to death. And she represents herself and her family in our school extremely well, but she's absolutely right. Let's not forget at East, for example. If she were a student 5 years ago, say 2015, and she was a junior or sophomore in our school, she would have been in a school where the graduation rate was less than 30%. And so when you ask the question about why weren't kids applying for FAFSA forms, it's because they were sitting in schools where 70% of the kids were not even graduating. And so college-going culture was not the predominant thought in those schools. It was about getting kids out and getting them into the workplace and moving forward. What I'm most proud about at East is that our counselors and social workers are playing a vital role in helping to do the work of supporting kids and helping them to envision a future and helping their parents to navigate through that. You've got to remember, a lot of our parents in our district went through our city school district, and many of them did not graduate either. So when Ms. Walter says to us, you know, some kids are sitting in homes where parents don't know the college-going experience, she's absolutely right. And when Stephanie Towns said earlier about the community playing a role in this, I want to thank publicly Howard Konar and the Konar Foundation for funding the program, one of the programs that Ms. Walters is in, and that is a program that is called Steps to College. And they take 30 kids a year starting in their 8th to 9th grade year, and they put them physically on college campuses for 2 weeks so they can demystify college and how scary it is or is not. And then they provide mentoring and support throughout the whole school year. Then the next summer, they go to another college campus. So by the time Ms. Walters graduates from East, she would have spent at least 8 weeks on 4 different college campuses in our community, and hopefully nationally. We're looking at trying to get to an historically black college in the next couple of years, also have the kids be on that situation also. So, I mean, what she represents is the hope for our future. What she represents is the possibilities that exist when the community comes together. And what she represents is, you know, a return on our investment. Like, she has taken advantage of every opportunity at East, every opportunity in the community, and positioned herself to do great things and set herself up to be able to travel abroad internationally, but to also give back to her community. So I'm extremely proud of her, as if she was my own daughter, and she knows that. And I know that she represents the thoughts and opinions and aspirations of all students. The key becomes, how do we create an environment where all kids can dream and do the work like her?
Well, and so we've been focused on some of the report card's data that is the kind of metrics that have to improve or that are struggling. I want to ask all of you, and Stephanie, I'll start with you. What is in this report card that gives you the most, that buoys you the most? A sign of progress, an arrow going up, something that says, yes, that we're moving in the right direction here?
I think for me, the thing that always stands out is the exemplary pre-K education that we have here in Rochester. We are very good at starting our kids out on a solid foundation, intellectually, socially, and emotionally. And the key is, how do we continue that as they go up through the school system? But it's really important. Not only are we a model nationally for pre-K education, but one thing that is just sort of touched on a little bit in this report card that I'm so excited to see what happens in the coming year is how we're going to build even more on that. So we have a great pre-K system, but what happens from birth to 3 years? Because kids make huge gains in our pre-K classes. Some of them in 1 year will attain 2 years worth of growth. But how much better could we be if they came into the pre-K system more ready to learn? So that's where we have a number of work groups that are working from birth on things like maternal and child health, infant and toddler mental health, home visitation, language and literacy from 0 to 3. And to me, there's only a glimmer of it in this year's report card, but that is one of the things that I'm the most excited about moving forward, and that I think that it'll be exciting to see where are we next year with those youngest children in our community.
Jackie Campbell, what's in there that gives you some hope?
I would echo what Stephanie said, and also that as we are looking at 0 to 3, also how we transition out of pre-K into K-12 education. And so our partnership with the district, I think, is as strong as it's been in quite a while, and looking for some alignment. The other thing I wanted to point out, because we didn't touch on it, was parent leadership and parent engagement. And where one of the things that we are invested in is changing some of the power dynamics. It's how you actually get to changing some of the systems is by actually working with parents as thought leaders and decision makers around our collective tables. And that gives me a tremendous hope.
Sean Nelms.
Yeah, I mean, I am encouraged, and I don't want to overstate or understate what Jackie said. Having alignment with the RCSD is pivotal and critical. And I'm excited that from day one, Dr. Meyer Small has attended meetings herself, has had her team available. She's trying to align the work of RCSD with the work of Rock the Future. And that's the first time that has happened. It's the first time when the district has really leaned in this way. I mean, the board president has been available and been supportive of this initiative from day one. But to have administration from the district really see its value in understanding how we can lean into our conveners and to maximize their support is going to have huge dividends for this community. So Rock the Future is the entity in which we bring together all the stakeholder groups, but it is this district that will help set our path forward by working together and holding one another accountable. And I think that's why we have the title of our event on November 16th or 19th. It's on the horizon. You know, what's ahead becomes very important, and it's forward visioning and forward thinking. And November 16th to the 19th, we'll have our summit virtual. We encourage the entire community to listen in by going to rockthefuture.org.
We're going to make sure listeners have information on how they can do that. You also will have a link to the Rock the Future report card if you want to check it out. We'll post it on our link on our various platforms. And as always, on the podcast, I mean, it's podcast, it's the audio version of the show that you can get every day, the same afternoon, by about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. All the shows are going to be there. So WXXINews.org/connections. Before we lose the hour, let me ask Regine a thought about something that Stephanie Townsend said earlier this hour. Earlier this hour, Stephanie challenged parts of our community to think about what they can do. And we've been a community that I think is in some ways pretty divided. I mean, we are we're pretty sort of self-segregated along a lot of different lines and demographics. And you know, Regine, there was a time, it felt like ages ago now, pre-pandemic, when there was that debate about almost a year ago about cutting teachers in the Rochester City School District and cutting mm-hmm. teachers in the middle of a school year and what the district would have to do to close budget gaps. And I remember one student saying on this show, you know, people in the suburbs don't care. Stephanie's challenging everyone in the community to care, to invest in however they can, whether they're a business owner or someone who lives in the community. I want to ask you, as a student in the Rochester City School District, do you think the suburbs care about the city?
In my opinion, I don't think they care solely because I don't really recall having any, you know, I don't recall them caring about what's going on and the fact that certain kids who live in suburban areas and who go to suburban schools already are in school. And I haven't seen any remorse or any sign of care for those who don't get to go to school twice a week and who have to stay online at home 100% of the time, because it really is difficult. Like, being in the perspective of knowing what it's like being online every single day since school started, it can be difficult because, first, the work is even more difficult because we're online. And second, we get so much work. And kids also have lives. So trying to balance that all out, it can get really difficult. And I don't see, you know, people, advocates that I know, because I do know a couple of people who live in suburban areas and who do go to suburban schools. But I haven't seen any sign of remorse or anything that they have shown to, you know, try to do what we're doing here today by creating a community to where we can, you know, where kids can feel they are learning the correct education in this pandemic that we are going through today. So I do feel like they do not care because of that.
Stephanie, responding in our last minute to that and thinking about the challenge to the community earlier, how do you square those ideas up?
I think that the community, both city and suburban, need to step up more. And I think that, again, it's about looking not just at individually what can we do, but as organizations. Whether you are one of the largest employers in Monroe County, where you can think about what can we do for our employees, what can we do for our employees' children, whether you are a faith community and thinking about what can we do as a congregation to support our children and to support other people's children.
And let me just jump in because we're going to be out of time, and I know Sean Nelms wants to hit it too. You got about 25 seconds, sir. Hit it, Sean.
I want to say that suburban districts should not be forced to care. And I think what our election has taught us is that some people choose to not lean in and care when they're complacent and they're comfortable. And I would say this. We want them to understand what's happening before they make opinions and make statements. A wise man fills his brain before opening his mouth. And I think often what happens is how people show they care is by demonizing things they don't understand. We have to stop that.
Damn, well, yeah, that's a powerful way to end the program here. Listeners, check out Rock the Future's report card. As always, Jackie Campbell, thanks for making the time.
My pleasure.
Dr. Nelms, thank you, sir. He is the Josh Allen of Rock the Future conveners.
7-2, baby.
I had to give you that. Thank you, Sean.
All right, thank you.
Stephanie Townsend, thank you, as always, for the analysis.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Regine Walters, such a bright future. Thank you for sharing your story.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
You got it. More connections coming up.